This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 241. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site, about the Arizona Cardinals, of course. And Seth, are the Cardinals ever going to win? Because it's starting to feel like they might not.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's starting to feel like. They've struggled the last two games, and now all of a sudden you're seeing kind of the cracks in the armor, and all of a sudden there's a lot of questions to be had, and so that, you know, that makes things tough. It's been an interesting last 2 weeks in terms of on field and kind of like deep statistical dives of things, because all of a sudden you look at this team and they've put themselves in a position to be successful, and they've found ways to basically mess it up. And that's, you know, kind of the unfortunate sign of what is a bad team.
It is. And Sunday's result was a 27-10 loss to the Seattle Seahawks. They now drop to 0-3-1 in the year on the season. They have looked, unfortunately, they've looked progressively worse, even though against the Seahawks, it felt like in many ways statistically they were kind of the same. So now we've gone four games, game one, rallied back, got the tie. That's impressive. You have the Baltimore loss, which was a competitive loss. They were good for about 2.5 quarters against the Carolina Panthers before things started to fall apart. And then against the Seahawks, thanks to a couple of missed field goals, some defensive problems, they never really had a shot against the Seahawks this last week. And that's what we're going to talk about in this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We react to the loss, the good and the bad. There were things to talk about that have resulted, that are results of that, as in a roster move to take DJ Swearinger off the roster. He was released after the game. There were injuries to Christian Kirk and Zach Allen. And the talk and the chatter about general manager Steve Keim and his job and job security, it's now starting to get noisy about him. Then we'll look ahead at their next matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals, another winless team who, my goodness, is there? They better win. How are they going to win? And if they don't win, what in the when will they get that first win? That's what we're going to talk about this edition of the show. Let's talk about our reactions to the game, Seth. What were your biggest takeaways from that game on Sunday?
I think the biggest takeaway from the game is that this team has issues that we've talked about, but I think they have issues that go into almost like a mental state where you know, you kind of hit on it off the air that, I mean, their kicker struggles when things are changed for him. Their quarterback has struggled to find a way to work within the pocket consistently. Their defense struggles to not make boneheaded mistakes at you know, important junctures of the game. And so for all the physical deficiencies where they're still, you know, not as talented as teams like Seattle and Baltimore and Detroit, there are the mental gaffes at this point where you just don't know if it's on the players or on the coaching at this point. And that's kind of the hard thing to discern at this point, because you're looking at a team that, I mean, they are, you know, they're coming off 3-13. They're not as talented as other teams, but at the same time, the mistakes that they're continually making are just not mistakes you expect from NFL players.
There was a lot of things to be unhappy about. There were a couple of good things to see. Most of them were individual type things. Now, one was Terrell Suggs bounced back after the season opener, where he was very active. For the next two games, he basically was invisible. He came back again, was very productive against the Seahawks with a sack and a half, a forced fumble, I think 8 tackles and a couple of tackles for loss. It was good to see him bounce back like that. And you know, he now leads the team with 3.5 sacks. And now it's just a matter of he doesn't have to be dominating, but can he be, you know, impactful at some points during the game? Because at the same time, that the game wasn't a perfect game for him, because there were a couple times when he gave one, it was a very poor effort to make a tackle in the running game, and another one is he didn't hold the edge nearly as well as he should have on another outside run. They just kind of went past him. But I was encouraged by the play of Suggs. The talk about David Johnson is both positive and negative, but he was impactful as a receiver, 99 yards in receiving yards. And so despite the only the 37 yards rushing, he ended up with, or 40 yards rushing, I'm sorry. He had 11 carries for 40 yards. He ended up with 139 yards from scrimmage, which, guess what? You really should be able to live with every single game. If you're getting 140 yards out of David Johnson, things are happening for you. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't... Oh, you liked seeing some of the minor personnel changes that were happening. Chase Edmonds getting some looks. Chase Edmonds and David Johnson on the field at the same time. Kevin Peterson getting playing time, and it sounds like he has pushed his way into the playing rotation. So there were things to like, but there was just so many things to dislike. The Cardinals continue to struggle in the red zone, and add to that missed field goals, and then a defense that seems to have no clue how to do. They're not stopping the pass. They're not stopping the run. They're not creating turnovers, unless except on their sacks. They're creating fumbles, but they have yet to intercept a pass this year. I believe they're the only team without an interception. They've given up 10 touchdown passes. Only one team is worse. That's the Miami Dolphins, and they don't have an interception yet. And we, you know, missing Patrick Peterson and Robert Alford is a real thing. Missing Patrick Peterson is a real thing. This team is going down the drain very, very quickly. And kind of after the Carolina loss, not only did we have to recenter expectations, now we're left to wonder, well, will this team improve at all? I mean, it feels like a better team. If you look at across the board, this is a better team than 2018. But will they win more games is ultimately what's going to be. Did you see any positives in that game?
Yeah, I thought there were quite a few positives. I mean, you talked about Terrell Suggs. He had a better game. I liked the insertion of Kevin Peterson in a coverage aspect. You know, I thought Jordan Hicks had a nice game.
He leads the NFL in tackles, by the way.
Yeah, well, when a lot of other players can't tackle, that's...
Hassan seems to be doing okay now. He's starting to do something, make some positive plays.
Yeah, and that that was kind of one of my things. Is like he is when he's linebacker, really still either A, slow, or B, just flat out good. But when he's able to kind of just run and hit, he's doing really well. And so that's, that goes back to what we've talked about before, putting your players in a position to be successful. I thought that you saw more from in terms of creativity from Cliff Kingsbury. I thought their game plan was excellent. It was just poorly executed, from you look at like the pick six. One, that was a fantastic play by Jadeveon Clowney. You have to give him props for that. He's an athletic freak because he really didn't do anything the rest of the game.
Right. And Kyler said, he said, well, maybe he should have just tossed him at DJ's feet, but because Clowney had been getting more penetration than that. He'd been getting more upfield, which makes that play take care. But that was just a fantastic play as well.
But you go back to the play and this will be in the bad section, obviously, because it was a pick six. But you go back to the play, and there was a failure by three. I mean, it's going to get highlighted in Murray, but there was a failure by three different players, two before Murray even threw the pass. And the first one was David Johnson, because I don't know if he just has an aversion to blocking or what. But, I mean, he completely whiffed on the linebacker that was blitzing, which – in turn, and this isn't an excuse, this is just reality, in turn sped up when Murray threw the ball. And J.R. Sweezy has to find a way to get Clowney on the ground at that point. If Clowney bails, he did, then you either ride him out or you cut him and try to get him on the ground. Let him basically play, basically like a defensive player in the NBA. You can't let him shadow the guard and then make a jump attempt at the pass. I mean, as soon as Clowney left his feet, Sweezy should have, tried to bury him. So it was a cluster from three different players that resulted. I mean, and that's what happens when three guys make a mistake at once. I mean, that's usually the outcome. But I liked the idea that they were trying to run on those. They were trying to take advantage of the Seahawks in the way they pin their ears back. They were trying to take the onus off the offensive line and saying, hey, you can't, we know you can't block for 3 seconds, so we're gonna get you out in space and run a couple screen plays, because all of a sudden that makes the defensive line think for a second, oh my gosh, I just got a free run at the quarterback. Are they gonna run another screen on me? I mean, it goes, I can't remember when the play was, but it was in the fourth quarter. No, it wasn't that one. It might have been the series before the touchdown. Yeah, it was 2nd and 19, and they run a beautiful draw play. And David Johnson is a superior athlete to you and I, and I don't think there's a question about that. But it really did look like you and I running the football on that draw play. Like, there was just no burst. And what was the Red Sea that was parted quickly came crashing down. And so on 2nd and 19, instead of instead of, you know, maybe a 10 or 15 yard gain, because there was nobody, I mean, everybody bailed and there was nobody near him, they get a 2 yard gain because, you know, the running back doesn't run hard. I mean, those are just plays that kind of are the antithesis of what the Cardinals are right now. Like, there, you see hope, and then it comes quickly crashing down, and that just, I mean, that just comes to the kind of what we talked about earlier. They have talent, but they don't have talent, and so they better be as close to perfect as possible, because as Jess said in the opener, statistically, like if you just take the score away from it, statistically the game was like eerily similar for both teams in terms of
the same
of
amount
passing.
Of plays they produced, yeah. Roughly the same amount of yards.
I mean they both teams had four sacks, and so the difference, you know, they both had seven penalties. So the difference in the game ended up being simply the execution by Seattle was just better than the execution of Arizona. And then it goes back to what we talked about last week. They just desperately need somebody to make a play on defense. The sacks are awesome, and don't get me wrong, Byron Murphy breaking up the pass to Will Disley in the end zone was awesome. Those are fantastic plays, but they need somebody to make a game changing play, not a good football play. They need somebody to change the momentum of the game, and they just haven't gotten that since game one, when Chandler Jones, you know, had a strip sack of Matthew Stafford. And that's, I mean, that to me is really the difference in this game, is that we have a team that got a spectacular play from one player, and then everything else, you know, they executed. The Cardinals got no spectacular plays from anybody, and then they had a number of guys that just didn't execute, you know, whether it was field goals, whether it was routes, whatever it was. And so that, you know, that's the unfortunate outcome of this game.
Yeah, what we're left with right now is an offense that's got growing pains. They, you know, say what they will about not taking shots down the field, there have been shots that they just haven't connected on. Against Carolina, Christian Kirk should have caught the one. Kyler misfired on one to Trent. This last week, there was a play that Kyler extended, and he had Trent Sherfield down the field, and he tried to throw him open, but instead Trent turns around and tries to go up and make a play, and it makes it look like Kyler way overthrew when he was trying to throw him open. So there's been opportunities, they just haven't been making them. We're seeing a disconnect between the receivers and Kyler when the play extends. Kyler's looking for a play to be made and he's not finding it, and so he's getting sacked, or he's not throwing the ball away, or it's just a number of things. And so the rhythm that they had for about a game and a half is a little bit discombobulated. They're moving the ball, but they're not finishing drives. And then defensively, things are just, I mean, they're not stopping the run. They're not stopping the pass. They're not getting their hands on balls in the passing game. It's just been, and they're making mistakes, plainly. The tight ends, it's almost comical at this point to see, okay, who's the next tight end? And now they got Tyler Eifert coming up, who hasn't had much production, but definitely has talent. So overall, this game was just a disappointment overall because, well, they still had the red zone issues. There were the missing field goals, and they couldn't do anything to stop the Seahawks from doing what they wanted to do overall. So we're now at the point that was a... I mean, if we think about last year, Josh Rosen's first start, the Cardinals were in position to win that game against the Seahawks. And this was not even close to that, even though statistically they were close.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's where it comes down to. They just seem to be failing at different areas throughout the game and throughout, you know, different aspects. And you know, it's 1 week or to the next where you're just seeing different areas of the team kind of come apart. You had the struggles for the special teams this week in terms of field goal kicking. You go back to that Baltimore game and their special teams really struggled, remember? And then you had the offensive struggles through the first, what, three quarters of the Detroit game. And then you had in the Carolina game, you just had the inability to get a single stop on defense. I mean, that was probably the biggest failure of the season, was just the inability to get a single stop on the Carolina Panthers and a backup quarterback. But this week we saw, you know, we saw the inability of the team to string together successful drives, finish drives, get stops, and then they got stops and they couldn't move offensively. And then they go down and move offensively, and then they give up a 15-play, over 8-minute drive with basically, I mean, the game wasn't on the line, but it was all of a sudden the game was within reach, and then that was just backbreaking. And it was the biggest issue became it was a failure of veterans who were expected to kind of carry the team, not of your young players, not even of your defensive coordinator who had finally, it seemed like, made some adjustments. It was the failure of veterans in crunch time to make a play on defense. And, you know, it led to a loss and then what many were not expecting on Monday.
Coming next to the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, where we're going to move on from this, the sadness and despair of what happened Sunday. We've got some other things to talk about. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Rip podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We talk about the move to cut DJ Swearinger. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And it was something people were saying in the heat of the moment during the game, the type of thing that fans and analysts do. Oh, just cut DJ Swearinger. You never really think that's going to happen, but then Monday it happens. He is cut. And on top of that, they cut him before Cliff Kingsbury addresses the media, which means he actually has to answer questions about it. He didn't really answer any questions about it, but was DJ really that bad that he needed to get cut?
Yeah, I mean, he was, and that was the hard reality of it this year, was that this was a signing that everybody was excited about. And I think we as a fan base sometimes tend to gravitate towards nostalgia. And so we look back at we look back at what happened, what was it, 2 years ago? So 17, where in 16 and 17, where Scherzer was decent. And we look at it and we say, oh, this is the guy we want. But, and he had a good year. He was a Pro Bowl alternate in Washington. However, and this is where the caveat comes in. He was a malcontent on a bad team in Washington. So, and they just flat out cut him. So why would you bring in a guy that was unhappy with his role, even though he was producing at a high level? I mean, he was probably having his personal best season, and he was still bad-mouthing coaches in the media. And so that's kind of one of those powder keg type things where you're kind of asking for it. And so you bring in a guy that is admittedly talented but highly combustible, and then the games start and the talent's not even there. And I've said this before, I think he was misused in Vance's defense. However, even being misused, he's never been this bad since his rookie season in Houston, where he struggled to kind of find a role and fit in on that defense. And so all of a sudden, this guy who is a known malcontent is playing poorly and likely out of position. It was just a matter of and your team's losing. I mean, it was just a matter of time before it became an issue, because, you know, again, Houston, he got cut because he was a problem in the locker room. Washington, he got cut because he was a problem in the locker room. I mean, he signed a cheap deal with Washington because nobody wanted to sign him in free agency after a good 2-year run with the Cardinals. So it was interesting to think that they could come back and kind of find that same go to the well one more time and find the same success when this was a completely different roster with a completely different, you know, group of players, and no real veteran leadership that was around outside of Chandler Jones that was around when Swearinger was here in 16 and 17 and playing well.
It's an interesting thing for me, because to me, I get benching him, but he was brought in, he was supposedly a leader. He was a leader on the defense. He was a vocal leader. He brought juice to the defense. I don't know how to explain the play. Clearly there was something more than just the play, unless the Cardinals are simply making an example out of him. That's a weird position to make an example out of someone when you have no proven depth at all. Josh Shaw was their backup plan. He's on injured reserve. But now they have to turn to Deontay Thompson, to Jalen Thompson, or Chris Banjo. Two rookies, so a fifth-round pick, a supplemental fifth-round pick, and a guy they signed last week who had been cut by his previous team. This makes it interesting there. Now, I don't know what this has to do with anything. It's in the locker room after the game, after Cliff Kingsbury spoke to me, there was some reporters went in, and they were waiting at Swearinger's locker. One of the reps from the media department went to talk to DJ or talk to the reporters in that area. And then the reporters ended up talking to some other guy. I think it was DJ Humphreys that they started talking to, so a group of them went over there. But then DJ ended up walking Swearinger and walking away without talking to anyone. So it's just an interesting theory. I've heard it bounce around that he lost his mind after the game.
It makes sense.
There's got to be something else other than the play, because it's really kind of odd that they would, unless, you know, the bill of goods that they were promised, that they were expecting a competitive team, a team that was going to be in the mix. The Crabtree thought that, that Swearinger thought that, and now being on a bad, realizing where it's going, they're unhappy, and maybe that was affecting his play. I don't know. It seems very odd to now, for like the second week in a row, cut a guy who you're owing the entire year a salary already to, and a guy you could definitely use on the field, because now some will say it can't get worse. Yeah. While he lost the physicality and wasn't making plays, you certainly could have more blown coverages, which is what we're likely potentially going to see with the Deontay Thompson. Hopefully we don't see it, but now you've got rookies playing in this place.
Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what the worry is. But at the same time, then why did you even, you know, why did you even claim him to begin with if this was a thing? And, you know, I think it goes back to what you and I have talked about too many times on this podcast. There's a real lack of self-scouting that goes on within the Arizona Cardinals. I know it's not fun to do what the Miami Dolphins are doing, but I don't think that you have to go that far. And when you look at this roster, there are names that lead you to believe that there is talent, but when you kind of look at it, DJ or David Johnson hasn't really had what I would call a good year since 2016. I know he got injured in the game in Detroit in one game, but still, I mean, he was kind of a plodding, kind of bruising back last year. Larry Fitzgerald is wonderful. He's 36 years old. I mean, Father Time is undefeated for a reason. Christian Kirk
is only a second-year player.
You know, Charles Clay was let go by one of the worst offenses in the NFL, in the Buffalo Bills. Max Williams was probably, you know, a guy that just needed a change of scenery, young, kind of talented, injury-prone guy, and Baltimore had invested a ton into their tight ends with Hayden Hurst, a first-round pick, and Mark Andrews, a second-round pick. So that one was kind of one that was like, okay, that makes sense. Chase Edmonds, never really done anything in the NFL. I mean, he was a backup last year as a rookie. You know, we don't really know what we have. Kyler Murray, rookie quarterback coming into the NFL. And then you look at the offensive line, you've got, you know, Justin Pugh hadn't been healthy in years, A.Q. Shipley coming off an ACL, J.R. Sweezy had his best season in his career, and it was in a heavy base, you know, run game. DJ Humphreys hasn't been healthy in his career, and Marcus Gilbert hadn't been healthy in what, 4 years, 3 years? So it was like, okay, so you put all that together. It's like, yeah, there's some good names. Marcus Gilbert's a great name. Charles Clay was a good name. Fitz and DJ, those are good names, but those aren't necessarily great talents anymore. They're just good names. And then you do the same thing on the defense, and then you look at it and you go, oh, I mean, Corey Peters is a good name, and then it was like, ugh, on the defensive line once they cut Darius Falon, right? And then you look at Jordan Hicks and you go, if he can stay healthy, and you look at Hassan Reddick and you go, if he can catch on, and then you look at the cornerbacks and you're like, oh my gosh, Robert Alford's hurt, Patrick Peterson suspended, so we knew there was going to be problems there. And then you get to the safeties and you go, oh, that's a good group. You got Buda Baker, DJ Swearinger. So you look at it and it's just, it doesn't make sense because you look at the names and you're like, oh, there are some good names. But when you really dive in, when you really dig down, there's just not that much talent. And so it should have been looked at as a rebuild. And you know, especially when you're coming off, you know, firing a head coach, getting rid of a quarterback in one season, like, I don't know. I mean, would it really be realistic to be like, oh, this isn't a rebuild? You know, we're trying to fix the errors of last year. Well, I mean, the errors are there because there's a lack of talent. And so you have to rebuild the roster before you can expect any coach, whether it was Steve Wilks, who was a bad coach, or Cliff Kingsbury, who has done a good job schematically. I don't know yet. I don't want to get on that he's a good coach, bad coach. He's done a good job schematically so far. But to expect anything more than kind of what we're seeing, and that's the unfortunate reality.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll move on to some other talk. Injuries. Christian Kirk could be missing some time. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're done with talking about DJ Swearinger. We'll see what happens there. At the very end of the game, Christian Kirk gets hurt, gets up, makes another play, catches the ball, then has to be helped on the field. It doesn't look good. On the replay, his leg, his ankle got turned. And this is after, so Damir Bird was out with a hamstring last week. Michael Crabtree off the roster. Kirk is out. The Cardinals signed Pharaoh Cooper on Tuesday. They were left, you know, heading this week. Now, they haven't said exactly how long he's going to miss. The number that I've heard tossed around is 3 to 4 weeks, which would fit what kind of injury that looked like. It hasn't been reported by anyone, but that's a time frame that I've heard from a couple of places. And so this receiving core, which, you know, they had 7 receivers, they only had 5 healthy ones on Sunday, then he gets hurt, and you're left with Andy Isabel is going to have to be the main slot guy. How critical is Christian Kirk to this offense? Even though, you know, the numbers for the offense haven't been great, but how much does it set them back without Kirk?
I'm not sure. Obviously, he's a talented player, but, I mean, I don't think he is the difference maker that a lot of people had hoped he was. You know, I've always said I felt like his kind of ceiling was a Randall Cobb type. And you kind of look at his stats and extrapolate them out. If he was ever to get 16 games and through 2 seasons, he's clearly not going to, even though it's not, you know, official at this point. But and you look at it and Cobb, you know, he's had really good seasons, but he's only had one 1,000-yard season. And so you look at a guy that is kind of a volume type slot guy that can make plays with the ball in his hand, but he can also, you know, do some things as a runner after the catch or in different ways, or running the ball, you know, handoffs, jet sweeps, which we've seen more of lately. Of course, every time they run it, they get a holding call. I can't figure that out right now. So I think from that perspective, it's going to hurt because he's a multiple type player. I wouldn't say it's going to hurt from like, oh, they're going to need a wide, you know, he's a great wide receiver and you can't lose a great wide receiver. I would say he's a very good football player that is why they're going to miss him more than he's a great wide receiver, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't come up with a couple of plays that he should, but he's been productive. Well, now we'll get to see what Andy Isabella is made of. He's going to get a good amount of playing time, though. It'll be interesting to see if Farrell Cooper plays more than Isabella. Then you're starting to worry about your Josh Rosen pick.
What was that? I think it was Darren Urban that said, it was part of the problem, issue, whatever you want to call it, is that he is a slot guy, and they're not going to, you know, the two slot guys are Fitz and Kirk. I mean, they're interchangeable and they're moving outside as well. But you're, no offense to Isabella, you're not going to take either of those guys off the field, right?
Right. That makes sense, because you got Fitz, you got Kirk, and then you still have to work in your tight ends that get flexed out, David Johnson or Chase Edmonds, that get flexed out. So he just made, you know, people are very down on Isabella, and just the fact of the matter is there aren't any snaps for him. There should be snaps for him this week.
Right, and then, you know, and like you said, if he's not getting snaps this week, then it's definitely time to sound the oh no alarm. But I think this week will be kind of the tell. Like, and he got more snaps. I mean, he played 8 snaps. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but, I mean, he got a carry. They used him in the run game, which I thought was important because it allows them to kind of, again, be multiple and showing different things. And like I said, I thought schematically Cliff had a nice idea of what to do. I just think it was horribly executed on Sunday a lot of the times.
Another injury that is that came up was third round pick Zach Allen. I wonder if something happened to him, because he left the game the end of the first half with a shoulder injury. He only played 3 snaps. He didn't start, and for the first time all season they had 6 defensive linemen active. It felt like maybe, because he wasn't on the injury report at all, something happened at some point that led them to not start him and to keep 6 defensive linemen active, because then he goes down and they're still left with their regular 5. We don't know what the severity is of that injury, but we know that they also cut Miles Brown today, which means they now only have, you know, they've only got 6 defensive linemen on the roster, and if Allen isn't healthy, that leaves him with only 5 healthy ones, which is what they'd been playing with before. I was told by John Gambadoro that he expects that the Cardinals will sign a defensive lineman. They still have an open roster spot as of Tuesday night, because they signed Farrell Cooper and cut Miles Brown, meaning that the DJ Swearinger roster spot is still open. So keep an eye out on that. I mean, if you're listening to this, it might have already happened, but you might see a defensive lineman added. I wonder if they'll go the veteran route. I wonder if by releasing Brown, who's their backup nose tackle, I wonder if this is a guy that people have been throwing out there for months, myself included. Doma Tepeko, still out there on the free agent marker, played for Vance Joseph. He's a true nose tackle. He's pretty solid. He's pretty durable. And they just got rid of their backup nose tackle. So maybe something to watch.
Yeah, and it would be something to watch. And it'd be interesting to see kind of how they do that in terms of finding the playing time and who they're looking for. You know, this was a game where it's a cliche, but they lost more than just the game, and that's the unfortunate thing, because you felt like you could see this game going in a positive direction, and then you saw the play on the field, and you're like, oh, that, you know, that kind of sucked. But then to compound that with losing 2 rookies who are, or not 2 rookies, but 2 young players who are important starters, all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, Like that's that old here we go again, right? Like that's the problem.
That's,
and
when it comes to injuries, that's how it feels. You're like, come on, can the Cardinals not get a break other than a bone?
Right, exactly. And so that's, you know, that's the unfortunate one. You know, Allen has not been great by any means, but at the same time, you look at it and there was a definite kind of fall off this week against the running game and he wasn't out there. I know Christian McCaffrey had a good game because he had that 900 yard run, but they had for the most part played better against the run this year than we expected. And then you get to, you know, and then you get to this week and he's out and all of a sudden it was a little tougher. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who one is missed more. And then by proxy two, who steps up more, right? Because all of a sudden now you know, you're going to get more Jonathan Bullard, who's actually played surprisingly well.
He has, and Clinton McDonald has not.
Right, and then you know, you're hopefully, I mean, we don't know, but hopefully you're going to see some more Andy Isabella. And so, like, if you get production from Isabella and the defense is still struggling to stop the run, all of a sudden you're like, oh, man, that Zach Allen loss hurts some more. But if you're not getting any production from Isabella and the offense sputters even more, then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, they need Christian Kirk back because they need that multiple threat that he offers because that is something, you know, with DJ Swearinger, Chase Edmonds, and then Kirk, you have three guys that – When you ran that two back set and you brought Kirk in motion, all of a sudden there's a lot of options going on. Again, execution wise, not the greatest. However, there was some options to be had there, and that's better than nothing.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, there's been a lot of talk. There's been a lot of chatter about Steve Keim's job. What does he need to do to keep it? Will he get fired? Should he get fired? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And the talk has returned to general manager Steve Keim and his job. You guys, you listeners, will know that if you've been with us for a while, that when it came to last year, we both were on the, you know, if they were going to fire Steve Wilks, they should have fired Steve Keim. And then, when they didn't fire Keim, Michael Bidwill spoke as if he had all the confidence of the world in Keim. Now, he gets to hire a brand new coach who is an orthodox hire, draft a number one pick at quarterback, and the team is not producing what was expected. Now, maybe expectations were too high, but a winless start after four games has, plus veterans like Michael Crabtree and DJ Swearinger just getting cut and still having to pay him. Marcus Gilbert, Darius Filon, things that aren't necessarily his fault, but all the flaws of the drafts and the failings and free agency have come to a head. What will it take for the rest of the year for Keim to keep his job? In your opinion, what has to happen between in the next 12 games for Keim to not get fired?
I think they just have to start winning. I mean, the first two games were fine. Not great, obviously, but fine. However, the issues become that they have to at some point find a way to stack wins together. And the reality is right now they're not doing it. And I'm not sure if they can with the talent on the roster. And that then begins to shine that spotlight on Keim. And if a radical change in coach and quarterback and philosophy didn't work, then all of a sudden you have to look somewhere else for where the problem is. I think the biggest issue from all of this is that you gave a guy who had struggled for the three, you know, or two previous years, and then had the bottom fall out in year three once he got away from his, you know, first coach that he hired. I think the problem becomes you have a – who wants this job, I guess is what I'm trying to say. If you hire internally, are you going to get anybody different than Steve Keim?
It's complicated, because if you fire him and then go externally, you are putting that GM in an odd spot to have to keep a coach on, or you're firing another coach after 1 year, or you're making Kingsbury potentially a lame duck.
Yeah, and so that's what the problem is like your options become limited, because you're either staying within the Cardinals family and you're internally hiring with the knowledge that, hey, Cliff's our guy, we need to get him better talent, or as you said, now all of a sudden you're telling a GM, if this coach doesn't do what you want, that you have the autonomy to fire him after a year. And so all of a sudden your options become severely limited, as opposed to what they should have been, or what they should be, you know, if you have a competent GM. So if they are able to start sacking wins, and I know we're going to get to this, but you look ahead, like the next three games are honestly winnable. I mean, all three. And if you're able to go 2-1, 2-4-1,
the last two were supposedly winnable.
Oh, I know that, but but you know, you look at it and you're at 2-4-1, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're less worried about Pittsburgh. Cleveland looked good this week, but they've been up and down, and you know, Atlanta looks. Or you know, Atlanta is in that mix, but you know, Atlanta looks awful. Like you have a chance to kind of stack some wins together and start to change the attitude of the team. And that's one of the things you talked about, is like veterans don't want to be around this, especially good veterans. They don't want to be perceived as wasting their time or their final few years of ability. And so now all of a sudden you're getting to the, oh, is this going to be another you know, Cardinals team that is every year just getting either older guys looking to cash in one more time, or they're overpaying mediocre talent just to get them to come sign in Arizona. And I think we were past that point. But now, because of the last, now into this season, it's again maybe back for conversation, and that's what the issue becomes, is that you don't want this team to fall back into being the old Cardinals, and that's, you know, kind of the biggest thing.
For the interesting thing for me is that once you let Keim keep his job for this year, it almost, you almost have to give him next year, in my opinion. You have to give him next year, because unless things spiral out of control further,
and they might,
and I don't know. This is Bidwell made the decision to keep him and give him the confidence. If you're not going, if you're going to let him hire an unorthodox coach, you hire and draft number one the quarterback, even if
after,
things look
after just drafting one,
right? So if you're going to let him do that, you can't fire him after 1 year. In my opinion, you can't do it. So you have to give him that next year, especially when you've got that cap space happening. You've had a year under the belt in the new system, unless you just lost all trust. What happened, if that's the case, between being completely confident in January, when all those flaws were still on display, all those mistakes were still there, and have it happen again? What happened? And what is Bidwell, if he changes his mind and doesn't trust him to bring him out of it, even though he said unequivocally that he knew that Keim could do it?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Is like, I think that's a good point. Where are you? How are you deciding that this is a guy that I trust? This is a guy that I want to. This is the guy that I want to continue to build the team. And then that gets into maybe, I mean, this is probably a conversation for down the line. If in the late November we're still talking about a team that's really struggling. But if that goes into is there an ulterior motive of keeping Steve Keim on, and it being that Michael Bidwell is kind of becoming Jerry Jones behind the scenes, if that makes sense.
He is highly involved. I mean, he is quite involved.
And I want people to understand, Justin and I are not saying that, but I think if you're saying, you know, after the bye, so after 12 games, that they are sitting at 1-11 or 2-10, and I know they've got a tie in there as well, but you know, 1-11 or 2-10, and or God forbid, 0-11-1, right? Oof. If they're sitting there and there's no chatter, there's no, you know, this or that, and then after the end of the season he's given the next year and they finish, you know, as a 1 or 2 win team, then I think we start to have that discussion. Because the thing wasn't, and despite what Keim would say, the thing wasn't about competing for a playoff spot this year. It was about looking competent. It was about heading in the right direction. It was about improving over what had been. And thus far, you're not seeing that.
Bottom line, if how many wins do you think it takes? Is there a number that they have to get for Keim to not lose his job?
I would say they would have to improve from last year, so I would say 4. But if they win 3 again, but they're competitive and
that's
things of that nature.
3-12-1 is better than 3-13, right?
Right. So that's the other thing, is that you look at it and you wait to see if this is, you know, if they are in fact better. And that's the key to this whole thing. If they're not better by the end of the season, and I do mean better, like as in like they just look better, then I think you begin to wonder if he's the right guy for the job, or if he just was kind of a flash in the pan. And that's what the problem becomes, because I don't know, even if, unless it's so bad, I don't know, as you said, you can move on, because I don't know how they're going to get somebody to come in here and take this thing over.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to look ahead to the Bengals game, a game, my goodness, that the Cardinals should win. That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that is 0-4, just got embarrassed on Monday Night Football. And my goodness, they've got Andy Dalton. He's not that good, but they're missing A.J. Green. They just lost John Ross. And, you know, they can't block. So, you know, first of all, despite being an East Coast game in the early time slot, this is a team that the Cardinals really better be able to beat, right? And I put it on Twitter. The Cardinals, like, watching the Bengals play, the Cardinals can beat them, right?
I mean, this is a game that does get people fired. And I'm not saying it should by any means, but this is like a loss to the Bengals is definitely one. It's kind of akin to what happened to
is this the Mike McCoy game for Vance Joseph?
Right, the Detroit or the Denver game last year. It's akin to the Green Bay game for Mike McCarthy.
Although I will say, I think it would be foolish. It would be foolish to fire Vance Joseph when he doesn't have his top two quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I do too, and I wouldn't think that they would, but I mean that is what happens. Like if you lose this game and it's bad, oh man, like all of a sudden you're looking at the schedule and go, I don't know if they're gonna win a game all season. Definitely wouldn't be favored in any games all season. So I think it comes down to this is a bad team. And if you are not also a bad team, then you should expect a win like or in a team like this. If you're a bad team, you're the team that the other organization is going, okay, this is our get right game. And so that's the thing. You don't want to be anybody's get right game. And I don't think the Cardinals are, but then again, I just watched Carolina get right and win two in a row because they got the Arizona Cardinals at the right time. And so, you know, we'll see how this works out. Their offensive line's worse than the Cardinals. Their quarterback's playing not well. They've lost two of their top three receivers. Their tight end has done basically nothing all year.
Cue the big game.
Yeah, right. So all of a sudden it aligns for a team to have, even though it is an early East Coast-ish game, it aligns for a team to have a successful day.
And for me, you know, you look at this is a game where they really need to be able to get pressure on Andy Dalton. He got sacked 8 times by the Steelers. If you got Terrell Suggs and Chandler Jones, they should be able to, as they like to say, eat. Chandler Jones has not been dominating this year. He made some plays against Detroit. His 3 sacks are sack fumbles, but he just hadn't been getting the pressure. Terrell Suggs has been great for 2 games, not great for 2 other games. This is one of those games where they both should be able to apply consistent pressure and maybe, just maybe, make a play on the ball in the secondary, something they haven't done all year. Defensively, I mean, Pittsburgh had their way with the running game and throwing to the running backs. And it would appear that defenses are going to play them in front of you and trusting that the Cardinals won't be able to play flawlessly for an entire drive. And until they are able to hit a play down the field or to do multiple drives where they just dink and dunk and pick and just take those 5 and 6 yard chunks every single drive and go to score touchdowns, that's probably what's going to happen.
Well, and that's what you're seeing. You're seeing a lot of deep cover two where they're taking away the middle of the field. Their cornerbacks are playing they're playing basically an umbrella coverage, saying, as you said, take shots in front of us because we don't think you will. I was texting with a guy that works for a college, and we were texting about the third and 11 play, and it was in the fourth quarter, and it was the one where Kent Summers tweeted out that Kyler missed David Johnson open early, and then tried to get it to him too late, where he was in his own end zone and stuff like that. But they were running a dagger from the trips, and you watch the play unfold on all 22, and the receiver that was running the dig, you know, or the dagger route was Christian Kirk. He was the outside receiver. Fitz was on the inside, so he was taking the seam post, and then Kirk was running the 15-yard dig. And by the time Kirk got to the 20 from the 5 to hit his comeback, the pocket had collapsed. Both flats were open, but it's third and 11 late, you know, I think that was the third or fourth quarter, like late in the third, early in the fourth. It had to be late in the third. Sorry. That's not, I mean, you don't throw the ball to your running back who's at the 2-yard line and has to get to the 16. I mean, that's just, then you're going to get criticized for checking down, playing it safe, not taking a chance. But you watch it, and there was just nobody open. And that was the thing that, you know, has kind of been highlighted in what you're saying, is like teams are just saying, we're not going to let you get 12 to 15 yards down the field in time to make a read, have your receiver break, and then throw the ball, because we know we're going to be able to get pressure with just four. So they're dropping seven into zone, they're rushing just four, and they're able to get pressure and break down the pocket before the receivers get open. So as you said, they're going to give up the 3-4 yards. So as soon as the Cardinals get off time, as soon as you said, the Cardinals miss a play, all of a sudden what you're in is you're in second and third and longs, which then play to the strength of everybody else but the Cardinals. And so that's where this team has to start making plays, or they're going to get run out of the building pretty quick.
Right. And so they don't beat the Bengals. They've got the Falcons at home. They've got the Giants on the road. They've got San Francisco on the short week. If they can't get a Bengals win, when are they going to get that win? Is it not going to be? I mean, maybe Atlanta. Is it not until Patrick Peterson comes back? And, well, maybe Patrick will like that. He comes back, and then he's kind of the savior of the team, and they start winning a couple games.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like what people don't understand is the last two games, they've basically dared the team to dared the Cardinals to throw the ball short and let your receivers and running backs make plays, and it's not happened. They haven't done it well, or they haven't been able to finish drives or sustain success with it. And then when they hit the breakers, you're seeing either you had the Trent Sherfield drop in the Carolina game and the Christian Kirk drop. You had the Trent Sherfield where he stopped the route. You had the Kyler Murray where he missed, I think it was Kirk on a deep out. And so, like, you're seeing, again, a combination of they're missing their chances to get the big shots, and then they're not ever getting a second chance at them, and then they're not successful in the death by a thousand cuts offense, unfortunately.
And with that, so what should we pick? What should we pick for this game? Do you see the Cardinals breaking out, or do you see the Bengals coming out and fighting?
Well, I mean, we both picked them to lose last week, so it's not like we jinxed it.
Right, right. But I expected, you know, I had the Seahawks getting 27 points. It's just the Cardinals didn't get. So I don't know if the Cardinals are going to break out offensively, but I think the defensively might do a little bit better. Cincinnati's just a kind of a mess right now, and it doesn't appear like they've got much heart left, much fight left in them. If I had to pick, I'm saying the Cardinals take this one 24-13.
I think the Cardinals win this one. Don't yell at Jess and I. But I think the Cardinals win this one. I'll say they do break out. I'm going to say 35-17.
Ooh, nicely done. That's it. We've made our predictions. Hopefully we have a much better show to deal with in the next week. That'll wrap this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast up, episode 241. We will be back in a week. Hopefully the Cardinals have a win in the win column. They finally have a one there. That would be fantastic. On behalf of this show, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.